I want to make three points tonight as I talk, especially to the ladies, but I think even the things we talked about last week directed to the men would apply to the ladies in that you have to find the proper balance in your life. And the things that I'm going to say tonight about the ladies, I think, will apply to the men. And I think you'll see that as we go on. But let me just make three points, and if you're taking notes, I'll tell you when I'm switching points so you'll know. And I got some sub-points under these three points. But the first point I'd like to make tonight is that in the past, in recent history, times have changed for women. You stop and think about it. It wasn't until 1920 in the United States that women could vote. And in other parts of the world, that right came later. In fact, I read a magazine the other day. It said it wasn't until 1971 in the country of Switzerland. That women could vote. Now, you know, Switzerland has always been a sort of a neutral country. I always thought that they were, you know, liberal country. But they, and I'm not saying it's liberal or conservative letting women vote, but the ladies couldn't vote in Switzerland until 1971. Stop and think about it. In the 1960s, in this country, women couldn't, for the most part, sign a lease unless they're husband or male relative co-signed that lease for them. Many could not obtain a credit rating unless the same thing was true, or couldn't apply for a loan. Many people that had daughters back in that time frame were teaching them and believed that it was smart for women to act dumb, they wouldn't send, many parents would not send their girls to college. Experts said that it was harmful for women to exercise. I mean, you didn't see, now if I'm off base, tell me, but this was in the early 60s. You didn't see many women runners. You didn't see women weightlifters. They were teaching that exercise was bad for women. In 1965, this was a survey out of Newsweek, 51% of the men, 51%, they surveyed a group of men in this survey, 51% of the men surveyed thought that women were temperamentally unfit for leadership. All right, this was back in 1965. Now, times have changed, and this is a point I'm trying to make here. Today, there's over 1,000 women that serve in state legislatures. 80 cities that have populations over 30,000 have women mayors. Women own more than 3 million businesses, which is up over 300% since 1979. Half. I found this statistic interesting. I got these out of a recent Newsweek magazine. Half of the U.S. professionals, talking about lawyers, accountants, and teachers, are women. Half. In 1985, this is the latest statistic I could find, 30% of the medical degrees that were granted in that 1 year went to women. And then, of course, we all know of nations like England, the Philippines, and India, who's a president or a prime minister or top leader, whatever name they use, were women. You had Margaret Thatcher in England. You had Corazon Aquino in the Philippines. And I can't say it, but it starts with a B. In India, led the country. And most, and I'll put this in quote, or in quotes, most thinking men, all right, today have reevaluated their biases about women and their leadership abilities. So point number one I want to make as we think about what an authentic Christian woman is that times have changed recently for women. Point number two is that these changes are a mixed bag. Yes, there's more opportunities that are open to women. Yes, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but be careful. Who said be careful? Not all these changes have been good. That's the point. That's some things I want to talk about under this point. I want you to stop and think about how TV portrays women today. Think about some of the women that are on TV. Let me just mention four things that come to my mind that how TV is portraying women, and then I'll ask you to add some observations. Four things that come to my mind as I think about the shows that I don't watch a lot of TV, but some of them. I think TV has said it's okay to work outside the home. And not just work outside the home, but a lot of the TV shows portray that the job is idolized by the woman. There's one, and I can't remember who it was, but there was one, and I don't know if it was Murphy Brown, who I haven't watched very often, or some other show like that. A woman got suspended from her job, and she went to her boss and says, "You don't understand. My job is just about everything to me." And so one of the things that that the TV roles or the TV portrayal of women has taught us is okay to work outside the home. Number two, it's taught us it's okay to be alone. They portray women as okay to be alone. Many of the TV women, and think about them, live without husband or children, and yet their life is portrayed as you know, okay, they're not lonely. The storyline goes that they're fond of their independence, they're self-sufficient, they're making it fine on their own. The third thing I think that the TV has portrayed us is that it's okay to mess. Now, and I'm not saying any of these are bad. Don't get ahead of me. Just sort of stay with me for now. But the third thing that they portray is it's okay to mess up. And many of the situations that are portrayed on TV have failed marriages, moral lapses, and I'll say domestic disorganization in the storyline. Some of them portray real people. I mean, they have problems, but they don't worry about them. They're not concerned about them. They're just living with them. And then the fourth thing that I think that the TV has portrayed for us is that it's okay to mouth off. And I remember the one time I watched Murphy Brown. Her house was being painted, and her house painter, after she had made some caustic comment about him, said, "Do you eat with that mouth?" And I don't know if any of you have watched that show, but she's quite verbose. She sort of uses her tongue like an Uzi. Whoever gets in her way, especially the male counterpart. What else would you think about as you think about the women that you see on TV? What other observations come to your mind? Well, it's out of balance, and we're going to talk about some things in a minute about the women's liberation movement and what it set out to do originally, and how it's pretty well accomplished one thing, but it really has done just the opposite for the other objective that it started with. I read this, and this guy was talking about how TV has displayed women, and he says they can now lay claim to being undimensional workaholics who live in independent isolation, who have muddled their lives without regret, and who wage unrelenting verbal assault on whoever gets in their way. In short, they have finally reached depraved parity with men. And I think that's a pretty accurate...
Yeah, I think John Reed is
coming. I don't know. I don't know. Now, the tragic thing, and Walt was onto it just a second ago, is that that portrayal has really thrown out of balance and skewed to that end to where now the traditional homemaker is being put down, not only by the TV folks, but if they're not careful, by themselves. And you read about surveys, and they talk about the traditional homemaker as being unemployed or having low esteem, that there's no real jobs except outside of the home. And a lot of ladies have written about that. And if you listen to James Dobson at all on the radio, he's had whole shows that he's devoted to that, to where he's had the traditional lady that stays home, doesn't work outside the home, takes care of the family, has been on there and basically said, wait a minute, I just want somebody to say that what I'm doing still has value, that what I'm doing is still important, that what I'm doing still I can have some, a personal esteem. And I guess the key thing that I'll say tonight, that I think gets at the heart of what an authentic Christian woman is that every woman is an individual, and that God did not make them all exactly the same. And He doesn't expect them to all live the same kind of lives, all fit into the same kind of mold. He expects them to be individuals, to use the individual gifts and personalities and temperaments and emotions that He's given them. Now, let me just talk for a minute about the women's liberation movement. Does anybody remember when that sort of got kicked off? Yeah, right in that time frame. Do you remember what their objectives were? There were two, Kathy. They were going to open up the marketplace to women. What was the second one? Their second stated objective was that they wanted to give greater dignity to the homemaker. Well, and that's going to be my point. They've done a super job in the first one. They've opened up the marketplace, and some of the things we've talked about illustrates that. But they've emphasized the first one so much that I think they've lost sight of the second one. And they've left many women with the idea that there is no choice. That if you're going to have esteem as a woman, if you're going to be, a woman, you've got to get out of the home and go to work. Now, let me say, everybody can't be June Cleaver. All right, you remember Leave It to Beaver, and everybody can't be. What was the other one? Ozzie and Harriet, Donna Reed. Father Knows Best. Everybody can't be like that. But, Lassie, right. But stop and think about it. I mean, just stop and think about how that's all changed. Who's the June Cleaver or the Harriet that you see today? Can you think of one? See, I try to think of a June Cleaver or a Harriet. That's. Now, but here's the point I want to make. See, even when we had the June Cleavers and the Harriets, we were trying to say at that point, well, here's the mold, ladies. Here's the mold, women, you got to fit into. And we were trying to fit everybody into that mold. And then the women's liberation movement came, and what they were trying to do, if they would have kept to their original objectives, were good, because they were trying to find balance. They were trying to say, look, everybody's not going to be, God didn't make everybody, every woman to be that way. He made some that He wanted to take positions of leadership, some that He wanted to work outside the home. But what's happened in the pendulum, which used to be all the way over here, has swung all the way over here. And now, as we've talked about, if you're a traditional homemaker that stays home and doesn't work outside the home, people think of you as inferior, and you don't have a real job, and you're unemployed. And just as guilty as we were back then of trying to fit every woman into that mold and saying, you've got to do this, and we're just as guilty today, I think, of trying to fit women into this mold that says, if you're going to have value, you got to work outside the home. And I think what God would say to us is that we ought not to try to put them into any mold. The Bible says in Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may be able to prove that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. And I think God is saying to ladies in that verse, and saying to say, look, aren't you tired of trying to be stuffed into somebody's mold? He's saying, I created you to be unique. And the personality I put in you, and the emotions I put in you, and the temperament I put in you, and the body I gave you, and the mind I gave you, I made you to be unique. And he would say, how can you hope to fit into somebody's mold? I don't want you to fit into anybody's mold. I want you to be what I created you for. When I put you together, I want you to be that person. And I think the authentic Christian, I'm going to give you three things, three characteristics that I think mark the authentic Christian woman. First of all, number one, we talked about this last week for men. First of all, number one, there's somebody that has been freed from the power and the penalty of sin. I mean, that's what a Christian is. They've come to Christ, and as the Bible says, the Son has set them free. And they've been covered by the blood of Christ, and their sins have been forgiven. They're no longer accountable for them. They're covered. They're covered with Christ's blood. They're in His righteousness, and they're on their way to heaven. They're born again. Second thing is that they believe and understand that they are unique, and they refuse to be put into anybody's mold. They refuse to let the old traditional kind of man that we talked about last week, the macho kind of guy, they refuse to let that person squeeze them into the mold. But they also refuse to let the world, as you know, and TV and however you want to say it, squeeze them into this mold over here. And then number three, they say, God, if anybody's going to squeeze me in a mold, I want you to. I'm not going to be a man pleaser or a person pleaser. I'm going to be a God pleaser. What do you want me to do? You created me. You designed me. What do you want me to do? Romans 12:1. I beseech ye therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And I think an authentic Christian lady is one like that, that goes to God and realizes that God created her to be unique, and then takes those unique things that God made her and uses them for Him. Now, I want you to stop and think with me about ladies that are in the Bible. And think, who are some ladies in the Bible that sort of broke the mold? All right, think about Esther. Esther was a young girl, I think. You remember the story? The king had a queen who disobeyed him, and he banished her, and they decided that he needed a new queen, and he sent his people out, his servants out to find one. They came across Esther. The Bible says that she was goodly to look on. She pleased him. He made her his queen, and then a wicked man in his court hatched a plot to kill all the Jews. And Esther, you know, listening to her uncle, stepped forward and approached the king and made it possible for the Jews to defend themselves. Now, you remember the story? The custom was back then that anybody that came before the king that wasn't summoned, if he didn't hold out his scepter, that person could be put to death. And yet Esther took that chance and went before the king to plead the case of her people. And I like that little verse. I've used that verse in several of my sermons. She says, if I perish, I perish. If I die, I die. If he puts me to death, he's going to put me to death. But I'm going to stand for my people. Now, I think God created her for that specific task. I mean, he gave her a beautiful body that would catch the king's favor. He gave her courage so that she would be willing to stand before him and risk her life to defend her people. All right, now, Ruth is what you might say a more traditional type role. She was a homemaker. Her husband died. She displayed loyalty to her mother-in-law and went back, left her land and went back to the land of her mother-in-law. And through a series of events, God gave her another husband. And she was in the line of Christ, descendants of Christ. Their son was Obed. Her husband was named Boaz. They had Obed, and Obed was Jesse's father, and Jesse was David's father, and on down the line. Sure you do. You got somebody who was a queen who used her influence to save her people. You got somebody who God made to be in the royal line of Christ. How about another one? Who? Mary, the mother of Jesus. All right. There was another one that God, you know. Now, stop and think about it. Here was somebody that was going to help raise the Son of God. I mean, she was going to provide an earthly home for the Son of God. And God created Mary for that specific person, for that specific purpose. I don't think that, all of a sudden one day God said, well, we're going to pick a virgin to have my son born. And then he started looking around to try to find one. I don't think it worked that way. I think God knew the plan. I know. God knew the plan. He knew what was going to happen. And when he made Mary, and he formed Mary, and when he put in Mary the personality that she had, the love that she had, the wisdom that she had, the faith that she had, he was preparing her to be the mother of the Christ child. And that was an untraditional role back then. Remember Apollos? Paul talking about Apollos? Apollos trained in their home. He sort of got his, what we would say, seminary education from Aquila and Priscilla. And Priscilla did a lot of the teaching of Apollos. And Apollos was a great teacher, a contemporary of Paul, teacher and preacher. Now, that was a role that you wouldn't normally, back in those days, would not be associated in the Jews. It would not be normal for somebody like Apollos to get his training at Priscilla's. Now, we know that for a mother to teach her son, that was appropriate because we know that both Eunice and Lois, Timothy's mother and grandmother, had a great deal to do with his teaching. But for somebody who wasn't your mother to teach you was very unusual. And yet she did that. She did that. Sure, Deborah. Remember Deborah? Now there again. There again, Deborah, a good example. Now, we talked about Mary, and we talked about who else? And Ruth. But here on the other side of the pendulum is Deborah, who was not only a political leader of her day, which was very unusual. I mean, can you think of another judge in the Bible that was a woman? I can't. But God chose her to not only be the political leader, but you remember she, and we talked about her, I think, when we talked about her characters of the Bible, she was a military leader. They gathered an army. Baruch or something like that, who was the general of the army. He says, if you don't go, I'm not going. And Deborah, went with him and got all the credit for leading the army and won a great victory, and in fact led to 40 years of peace with the Jews at that particular time. And so the main message I want to give you tonight is that every single, and I can think about the ladies of the church. I mean, I thought about you this week as I was preparing. And I thought, you know, God's made every single one of them, every single one of you, unique too. He's made you unique. Those of you that work outside the home, I think God's given you special talents to do that. And He's given you the ability to be both a mom, in some cases, a wife, and then also make a contribution, you know, outside of the home. And I think of others who are homemakers, and God made you for that special task. And neither one of you should feel any lack of esteem or inferiority. You're doing what God created you to do. Now, maybe there's some who are in that position because they've been stuffed into that mold. Then I'd encourage you, you know, to go to the Lord. Say, Lord, now, is there something else you want me to be doing? Is there something else that, you know, you made me to do? And ask Him that. But don't feel any lack of esteem or any inferiority because you say, well, you know, all I do is take care of my husband. All I do is take care of my kids. God made you do that. You do it. And again, I think it's, you know, it's true for couples. I mean, you know, the world has says, you know, here's the mold of being successful. I mean, you got to have a new car. You got to wear new clothes. You got to, you know, you got to go. You got to have a big house. And many times the world has forced young couples into that mold when they'd be a lot happier with just one income and, you know, with somebody home with the kids, with somebody that God made to stay home, that wants to stay home. And that's what I meant when I started by saying some of the things I'm going to say about women tonight, but they apply to men. I mean, we you know, here's our mold. You're successful. I mean, you don't turn down a promotion. I mean, yeah, you may have to uproot your family and move 1,800 miles away, but you don't turn it down. If you do, you're finished. And we're forced into that mold that says we're going to take it. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's wrong. It'd be wrong for you because of the way you feel. But it might not be wrong for this other person that God created.